Mother Earth has woken today. The leaves are stirring around her where she lay. Let thunder drum all over the earth. The seed of life has now given birth. I love the earth. I love the sky. And when I die, bury me high. A son, make him a leader, make him the chosen one, living in memories of days that are gone. Today is the birth of a new dawn. He'll love the earth, he'll love the sky, and when he dies,
First Nations Radio. I'm your host, Dan Wapipaw, on this gorgeous, gorgeous Friday afternoon. I am here with animal communicator Barbara Shore. Welcome to the show, Barbara. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm all so right. excited to be here with you.
All right, all right. She's had me on her podcast. What's the name of it, and how can people get a hold?
It's Animals and Us, mm-hmm. Voices of a New Paradigm. Mm-hmm. And the website is animalsanduspodcast.com.
Okay, all right. And that is your website?
That's our website. Okay. And then it's on all the big podcast venues, Apple and Google and Spotify and all that.
Oh, beautiful. All right, all right. So we're going to delve deep into animal communication and probably the many different ways that people communicate with animals, not only psychically, correct? Yeah, like on an energetic body, and also reading body movements and putting it all together, and yeah, a holistic sense towards animal communication. All right, I want to learn more about this. In the meantime, you're listening to First Nations Radio right here on KSKQ 89.5 FM, Ashland, Oregon, 94.1 FM, Medford, and streaming live on www.kskq.org. And today's show is brought to you by Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice. Support for KSKQ comes from our listeners and from Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice. Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice brings together labor unions, religious congregations, student groups, and community organizations to improve working people's standard of living, job security, and their right to organize. More information at sojwj.org or call 541-841-8341. Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center. KSKQ recognizes the nonprofit community support of the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center. KS Wild is dedicated to partnering with individuals and communities to stand up for forests, waters, and wildlife of Southern Oregon and Northern California, ensuring a legacy of clean water, wild rivers, and towering ancient forests. Details about forest and river conservation and KS Wild's Rogue River Keeper Program are available at kswild.org. And finally, support for KSKQ comes from our listeners and from Lila School. The Lila School is an educational nonprofit in Ashland and is a state-approved psilocybin-assisted therapy training program. The school is enrolling students now for its next training group. The program will be a hybrid of online, in-person learning. More information and applications at lilaschool.org. Okay, now for the reason why we're here, welcome to the show, Barbara, and give us a little background to yourself, what you do, and how you came into this animal communication field.
Okay. Well, I've loved animals all my life, mm-hmm. as many people have, and I became a dog trainer. I worked as a animal behavior researcher or ethologist for a while with wolves and coyotes, mm-hmm. and eventually landed in veterinary school, and had a passion for wildlife always. So I worked at the zoo, which probably wouldn't now, but I worked at the zoo. I worked with wildlife all through vet school. I went to vet school in Colorado, Colorado State University. In fact, just a couple weeks ago, we had our 40-year vet school reunion in Colorado, and it was so much fun. So that's how I started, and I worked as a veterinarian for a while, spent a year in Africa working with wildlife. And along the way, I just realized there's so much more to the animals than what I was taught in school.
Yeah.
And so much more than their physical bodies. I wanted to get to the core of their health issues and their emotional issues. And so I worked in practice for a while and then decided to get out. And I wanted to go into holistic medicine and started studying that for a while. And along the way, I met an animal communicator. And I knew that was my work. I had already been doing some of that with dolphins. I had swum with dolphins and was communicating with them every day. But it wasn't public. And then when I learned about animal communication, I knew that was what I needed to do.
So how did you first learn that you had a talent or a gift for this?
I think really it first came through my own personal guidance. I journaled as long as I can remember, and years ago that turned into journaling with my own higher consciousness and my guidance. And they told me for quite some time that I could talk to animals, and I don't think I believed them for a long time. And then so it just kind of evolved. And when I first started trying to learn animal communication, people were teaching that you give and receive images, pictures. Well, it wasn't working for me, so I thought I couldn't do it, but somehow I kept at it. And eventually I realized I'd already been doing it through my writing. And my writing has been primary for a long time. It's like automatic writing where I'll just ask a question of a particular animal or group of animals, and it's almost like my hand just writes it out without going through my mental process so much.
So it's kind of like Edgar Cayce's meditative state where words poured out of him in this state of flow.
You're right. I read about Edgar Cayce years ago, but didn't think of it that way. It's a that's how it is. It's not, I don't dream it. I think he dreamed a lot. But it just kind of flows out. And it's really beautiful when it happens.
Well, my people very much feel that animal communication is necessary. And a lot of people, you know, of course, they're at the point where is it possible, you know, and so there's, and of course, skepticism is one of the main roadblocks into seeing that possibility come to fruition, you know. So it's the inherent belief, I guess you would call it a belief, though it's not a religion, thought that this is possible.
Yes. Skepticism is a huge roadblock, and I've gone through my share of it for sure. And I would say it has taken many, many years to get through it. Sometimes it still pops up. You know, we've been, in this culture anyway, we've been trained and conditioned to think that there's no way animals could talk or even think or even have spiritual lives, and so you know, it's hard.
Incredible. Animals are incredibly intelligent, and they're only now seeing, you know, how intelligent the corvids are, the crows and the ravens, you know, and they're only they can only filter it through the human intelligence, you know. So all these animals have their own intelligence that humans can't even fathom.
Exactly.
So like a bat, you know, flying in the night, you know, its intelligence with its echolocation and it's the most agile flyer there ever was, you know. And so the or how birds in a murmuration communicate with every beat of their wing, you know, in a kind of a group hive mind, you know. And I used to be a beekeeper and have witnessed the hive mind in action, you know, and how all of these really people think it's the queen bee, but it's no, it's the group hive mind that's controlling everything. Yeah. The queen bee is following orders of what the group is saying.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. She's just an egg layer. She's...
Uh-huh. That's her
she,
whole
she
job.
She doesn't... Nanny didn't do no dictating.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the intelligence of animals shows through in their very body forms because animals are locked into contributing to life. They cannot be destructive. There's no way they can be polluters. Because if animals were destructive, like maybe a dog is digging a hole or something like that, that's only an human interpretation of what destruction is, you know. Oh, it's destroying my lawn, you know.
Right.
But that dog is following a natural instinct that it's having, you know.
Right.
And for digging a hole for some reason, you know. And it's up to us to try to understand animals and where their motivations are, what their instincts they're following, and how they think, you know.
Yeah.
And so there's been incredible examples of these stories. The ape, what's her name?
Oh, Jane Goodall with the chimpanzees.
Yeah, Jane Goodall. Yeah. And then there's the Black Panther or the Jaguar.
Oh, yeah. The Spirit.
Spirit, yeah. Spirit,
yeah.
The Jaguar.
Yeah, that's Anna Breitenbach. I was just at a symposium that was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Must be a month ago, where animal communicators and researchers came together. There are people actually researching animal communication, giving it validity that it deserves. And Anna was one of the keynote speakers, and she's pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry, caller, whoever called, I cannot answer the phone during interviews, live interviews.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I suggest people look up, because the Jaguar was named Diablo.
It was a black leopard.
Black leopard, yeah.
Named Diablo, and he was hiding in his night box, wouldn't come out, wouldn't relate to anyone, and Anna spoke with him, and he just became this different being, and they renamed him Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who had this cat was extremely skeptical about all this, and he was transformed so that he learned to do it, and now communicates with all his animals.
Yeah, I watched the video a while back, and I actually brought my eyes started welling
yes.
up because of his reaction.
Yes.
To really, now that he has a way to communicate with Spirit, you know, and that Spirit was communicating back with him, and he had an experience. What was it? Spirit had wondered where the two little leopards were that she'd been shipped with, and he told her, sat at the fence and told her about it, and she acknowledged it. And then he started thanking her, and what was it? She would grunt. You know, and Anna, is that her name?
Yeah.
She said the leopard was communicating and saying thank you for being thank-you'd. So they were in a thank-you cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then actually later on, those two leopards actually came to live in the enclosure with Spirit.
Yes, that's what I just found out.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
In our symposium, I was on a panel with three other people. There were four of us talking. We had all written papers, and we were on a panel together. One of the people, his name is Chris, and he was a filmmaker making that film with Anna Breitenbach.
Mm.
And he was transformed. So now he's totally open to this and trying to do some of this work himself. He's had some incredible experiences. So I think that film is still available online, I'm sure. If you look up Black Leopard Spirit Anna Breitenbach, it should be there. It was part of a larger film called The Animal Communicator, and it went viral. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I think that's what I saw, The Animal Communicator. Because it was, I think it was about like an hour long or something like
that. Yeah, the communicator. This piece was like 15 or 20 minutes about the leopard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering whether there was an update on that, you know, and the guy, definitely some kind of Scandinavian fellow, and how he kept up with the communication. I would love to get a follow-up on that.
Yeah.
So what are some of your experiences with communicating with animals?
Oh, my goodness. 30 years worth. Well, I've worked with people and their pets, their domestic animals, for a long time, done private sessions. Mm-hmm. And just how people understand what the animals are thinking, how they're feeling, what they need. And probably the most I've done with that is when animals are dying. Mm-hmm. And people just, you know, they're kind of at their wit's end and they want to know what they can do for the animal. They want to know, is it time to euthanize or not? Does he want to be euthanized? And then after, did I do the right thing? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. did I do this too soon, or not enough?
Yeah.
Did I do enough for her? I mean, all these questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've found that connecting with the animals directly can really help people and ease the animals too, because they picked up our emotions, you know, and if we're all stressed out and upset and worried, mm-hmm. that's what they pick up.
Yeah. Well, I feel that animals know when they're going to go. And so, like in my culture, when we go out tracking, you know, that is actually a whole nother larger issue on how we track animals, you know. In many cases, if you want to, like, track an animal, you find a footprint, you know, a fresh footprint, and then you just, like, meld with that footprint and try to image what the animal is and thinking. And there's a way of meditating that shuts down the spatial time, the objectifying nature of our brains, and so that we can move into the animal, or we can sense which direction the animal is at, you know.
Right.
So and that's part of, some people do it better than others, you know. Some people are come back with a deer all the time because they're always able to track this deer, you know, and
right.
Some people suck at it and
yeah.
hardly ever
yeah.
come back with any deer,
yeah.
you know. So yeah, very important, but also that we ask the animals to sacrifice themselves so that we can live, and the animals don't have a selfishness toward life,
right?
And so they don't fear death, you know,
right.
And they feel that if that animal can contribute to the health of another, then they were willing to do it, you know. And
right,
of course,
exactly.
you know, they're gonna, if you shoot a deer, they're gonna go through suffering and they're gonna go through fear and pain and everything, just a natural way of the physical body to die, but their spirit understands what's going on.
Exactly. And I've talked to animals about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's really hard for us to see an animal killing another animal and the suffering that happens. But what I've been told is that there's agreement, like you're saying. There's agreement between predator and prey.
Mm-hmm.
And often when that animal is you know, in its last struggle, the spirit's already gone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the body. It's the body with that basic survival skill.
Yeah.
You know, just trying to survive, but mm-hmm. the spirit's mm-hmm. already gone. When a human hunter goes out and is not in touch with that animal and just goes and kills it, then that animal can really go through a challenging process after it dies. You know, it takes a little while and there's a lot of upset.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I think it's really important to make that connection.
Yeah. I can only imagine, you know, being the animal and have somebody violently kill you with no communication and not honoring your life.
Exactly.
That will throw you at your very last moments of life for a loop.
Yep.
On what just happened.
Right.
You know, how can somebody be so disconnected and basically murder you? You know, because that's the difference between hunting and murdering. Is hunting is honoring that animal, and murdering is going out and killing that animal. So when we ask that deer We pray with that deer. If we shoot it, we take its last breath, you know, and then we take a little bite of its heart so that that deer can live with us. Mm. You know, the spirit of that deer can live with us, yeah. You know, and sometimes we'll make medicine out of that heart, you know, a deer hunting medicine. So that medicine, we ask that deer to connect with other deer to show us where the deer are, mm-hmm. you know. So, so they live in spiritual symbiosis with us.
Yes.
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 And that we're, and actually the whole idea of separation is a colonizing factor, because we could be all just one mind and many iterations of bodies.
Exactly. Exactly.
Who knows?
Yeah. You
know, because the interconnection is so deep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just wrote a book about elephants, which
yes,
you know. And the elephants have said that over and over again, mm-hmm. that we're all intimately connected, and that what affects one affects all, mm-hmm. and that it's up to humans. There was a quote that they gave me that I want to say, that I want to... They said, humans have the capacity to create or destroy on a larger scale than any other beings. Because of this, they have greater responsibility to care for the earth. This is their gift and their challenge.
I would say the human is the only animal capable of destruction. Because all these other elder relatives, what we call them, animals, is just a poor word. We've taken all these nations, is how we natives view them, with a long, glorious history of evolution and contributing to life and being a part, you know, and reduce them to critters and varmints.
Exactly.
You know, and natural resources.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a whole mindset that we need to change around. And I feel that animal communication is a route to help people to understand how animals think, what they think, how our lives impact them, what advice they have to give to us.
Yeah. You know, when I started doing this a long time ago and have been doing it, many, many, many people think I'm crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. changing now. People mm-hmm. are opening up. But all along, I just knew that the indigenous peoples, I mean, this was not new for them, mm-hmm. you know, and they could relate, indigenous people could relate to what I was doing, and I wanted to learn from indigenous people because it's all the same. Mm-hmm. And this culture, we're so separate from nature, and I think that's a huge disease that humanity now is going through, is that separation from the natural world.
Mm-hmm. Well, on this show, I say that they are worshiping the wrong God.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... That's self-evident, even the worshiping of a god, the whole religion thing, removes you from spirituality, removes you from that connection, removes you from our elder relatives. You know?
Exactly.
And,
yes.
It's a separating thing. You can't even pray to the Creator itself. You know, I mean.
Well, that's what I see, is that if you can communicate with animals on this level, I'm talking about the deeper soul level.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You can communicate with anything and anyone, including your own higher self or soul, yeah. including your divine guides, including the trees and the rivers, mm-hmm. anything, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. it's all one consciousness.
Yeah, yeah. There's tribes out in the West Coast that oak is their spirit animal.
Mm.
So, yeah. Uh-huh. So, there's different ways to communicate. One thing that I always put out in my teaching is what in permaculture they call the primary pattern. It's the torus that comes out from our hearts, that shows like an invisible donut, like the magnetosphere around the earth, you know, it's
yes.
the very same shape. And when our, like we're in each other's fields right now, and we're each other in Cloud's fields. My Cloud is my dog co-host who comes here every week with me.
And he's right in the middle.
He's right in the middle, yeah. And so he's receiving all these good energies and everything like that. So there's many different ways to communicate with animals. Some people get images in their mind. Some people get words. Some people get clicks. Some people get feelings.
Yeah.
You know, some people get dialogue.
Some people have dreams.
Yeah, some people have dreams, yeah.
What are the clicks? That's new to me.
I have a medicine person said that's how his spirits speak to him is through clicking in his ears, and for some reason that it translates to word in his mind.
Wow.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Uh-huh.
But the other thing is there are validation signals that people can learn about. You know, how do you know when you're actually tuned into an animal, for instance, and not just your own mind? Because it can be confusing. Mm-hmm. For me, when I'm really deeply connected, I get teary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Other people have different, you know, things happening in their body or whatever. But for me, it's tears a lot of times.
Well, it's just the animals are so powerful, you know. Yeah. It's just their presence is just so natural and so clean, you know. And how can you not, you know, become teared up when you touch something so connected emotionally and so deeply emotionally. I mean, it's something that all of us need to do in order to start respecting our elder relatives. So I was going to ask something, but it went away. So when you speak to animals, what happens?
What happens?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I get really quiet. I'm not a great meditator. It's mm-hmm. not like I sit there for an hour meditating first. Mm-hmm. I just get really quiet and try and go as deep inside as I can. And then I just focus on whatever animal or group of animals or whatever that I want to connect with. If I'm doing it in person, it's easy because, you know, I have their physical presence to be with. But often I'll do it long distance.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually helps me to have a picture of the animal with a close-up of the eyes so I can see who they are, but it's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll just, I really believe that love is the key that opens that doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And when I can love an animal and focus, put all my attention in that direction, then I start asking questions or leave the space open. But before I start, I always do a little invocation, and I ask for support from the unseen beings around, and I ask for my soul and the animal's soul to connect.
Mm-hmm.
And I also ask for protection from anything that's not love. And then I ask the animal's permission.
Mm.
And
very important.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And start asking questions.
Respect.
Respect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Respect and love, I think, are the keys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when you're dealing with the animal worlds and starting to get to know them personally on a dialogue level, that respect cannot help but be there.
Oh, my God, it's huge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just huge.
Yeah, yeah. So do you have any tips on how the average person can be in better communication with their animals?
Well, like I said, I think it's just getting quiet and being willing to listen. You know, we're so busy talking all the time and thinking all the time. But if you can get into a space where you're just very quiet,
mm-hmm.
and focus on the animal with a lot of love and respect, and just open yourself and see what happens. And it takes practice, you know. It just takes practice, and you learn how you work. Like I work through writing, or I can speak for the animals. Like you said, other people have different ways. You need to learn what's your way, because mm-hmm. everybody's different.
Mm-hmm.
And trust it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I will say, though, is it's really easy when you're doing this to project your own stuff onto the animals, your own beliefs, your own emotions, and think it's coming from the animal when it's not. So I think it's really, really important for us to do our own inner healing work,
mm-hmm.
our personal growth work, our spiritual practice,
mm-hmm.
so that we're open vessels for the truth,
mm-hmm.
and not our own perceptions.
Right. That is such a good... we treat medicines the same way. Like when we light sage, we don't blow on it. Because we could be blowing our energies into that sage that might not help another person around the circle.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's the same thing with the animals and opening up that communication. We don't want to be the polluted part of that and maybe possibly introduce sickness to the animal. you know, or suffering to the animal because we're so messed up inside.
Right.
You know, so, and we always say on the show, you know, if you want to, there's, an elder told me there's a wave out in nature that matches our brain wave. And when we go out there, we get to realign our brain wave with that, which where we came from.
Yeah.
and heal ourselves like that, you know, and get into that natural human being state. And then maybe communicate with animals rather than coming from a chaotic Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, radio wave, television signal, cacophony of noise, air pollution, environment.
Exactly. It's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's this gorilla, Coco, I think it was, who had advice for human beings. Do you remember what that advice was? Sign language. She spoke sign language.
I've spoken with Coco.
Oh,
in the
really?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Amazing.
Yes. Uh-huh. But what was the message you're referring to?
She was saying something about she was doing in sign language on how the humans are disconnected. And because of this, we're destroying the world.
She said that?
She said something along those. I'm paraphrasing.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, something about love being, you know, the way, being the key, you know.
Yeah.
So, I think I saw that on a video. So, the video's out there.
Cool.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, many, many years ago, I went to a conference in San Francisco. Jane Goodall was one of the speakers. It was this big conference by the Delta Society, who they do a lot of work with animals.
Mm-hmm.
And Penny Patterson was there, who was the one that worked with Coco, that raised Coco like her own child almost, and taught her sign language and the whole thing. And at the time, you know, I was just enamored of Coco and this whole process. And I asked Penny if I could talk with her. And she said yes. So I started having these conversations long distance. I never met her in person.
Mm-hmm.
In person, in gorilla. I never met her. But I would have these conversations with her.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue that Penny wanted me to work with was there was another gorilla with Coco that they had brought in. They wanted to breed Coco and have a baby that they could train. His name was Ndume. And they brought him in from a zoo and to be with Coco. And Coco wanted nothing to do with him. I would talk to Coco and ask her what's going on.
Uncouth ape?
Exactly. That's exactly what she said. He's uncouth. I don't want anything to do with him.
Wow.
Exactly. So I talked to Ndume. And he was a very beautiful, sensitive soul. And what I learned through him and through other sources as we went, maybe through Penny, was that he was in a zoo. He had a girlfriend in the zoo, another gorilla that he loved. They loved each other, and they would kiss and hug all the time. And then they took him away and put him with this other gorilla that he knew nothing about. And he just was sad, you know? He was upset. And Coco took it as he's just this, you know, uncouth gorilla who wants nothing to do with me. So it was really sad.
Yeah.
In the process, I stopped working with Coco because I felt like she was being bombarded by people who wanted a piece of her, you know? And here I was, this voice from way far away, trying to talk to her and ask her questions. Penny told me that after I had a session with her, she would get real quiet, you know, so she was thinking about things. But I just didn't want to bother her anymore, so I stopped. But then I would get these calendars from Penny and their organization, and there was a gorilla picture in the magazine. His name was Michael. And he had been with Coco when they were both very young, and they grew up together, and they loved each other, and Michael died. But he was gorgeous. He was the most beautiful gorilla. And I just started connecting with him, and he became a guide for me. Still is, Michael. This wise, wise being. So that's my Coco story.
Yeah. And for our listeners, long-distance communication, when you're communicating in this phase of reality, there is no distance.
Right.
Yeah. And that's been proven in quantum physics as well, where they had a double slit experiment and had a person from around the world focus, given a description of what it looked like, and focus on this double slit experiment. And the double slit experiment, if you observe it, it'll come out with two solid bars. If you don't observe it, it'll come out with an interference pattern. And so when he thought about this, no one else was around. It ran by itself, and with him meditating on it, came out with two bars because it felt that it was being observed.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And the whole idea behind that is these molecules elected to make a decision on how to into a waveform, whether it's going to be a double bar or an interference pattern. So there's intelligence in every single molecule.
Yes.
And there's intelligence in these animals as well, you know. So we're an intelligent universe.
Yes. And there's no time or space those realms.
Neither is there in prayer.
Yes.
You know, same
yes.
way.
Uh-huh. And when you talk about molecules, it's so interesting because my first book was about elephants and whales. Mm-hmm. And they both serve a similar function on the earth, which mm-hmm. is to harmonize and stabilize and balance the energy of the earth.
Their hearts and their brains are so big.
Yeah. They have a huge impact.
They have a large toroidal field.
Yes.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so part of their mission is to stabilize the earth, and part of it is to bring peace and love and understanding to all the beings on earth.
Mm-hmm.
But what they told me is that the whales in the ocean and the elephants on the land, that through their movements, with the whales, of course, they're swimming. With the elephants, it's walking on the earth, their footfalls.
Mm-hmm.
They impact the land, they impact the water with this consciousness, this focus that they project. And it goes into every molecule that bombards another molecule, and it just goes around the world.
The butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... And which leads us to your book. Can you give us the title and where we can get a hold of this book?
Sure.
Yeah, so let's talk about your book now.
Okay. It's called Soul of the Wild, the mm-hmm. recent one, Soul of the Wild, Book 2, mm-hmm. The Wisdom of Elephants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The first one was Soul of the Wild, Intimate Messages from the Hearts and Souls of Elephants and Whales.
Mm.
And I thought I was going to be working with all different species, which I was really excited about. You know, there's so many beings that I've communicated with over the years, and I wanted to write books about them.
Mm-hmm.
But the elephants and the whales came in, and they said, no, we want to rewrite this book. We've got new information. We want this book to get out because the information's important.
Mm-hmm.
So for the last 2 years, I've been rewriting the book. It's just the elephant portion of the book, and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of the old information re-edited.
Mm.
A friend this morning just told me it's a lot better than the first one, which
okay.
made me feel good. and then new information about climate change and consciousness of humanity and mm. evolution and all that kind of stuff.
Mm. Yeah, that's important stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, very important stuff.
Yeah. And they're well aware of what's going on.
Yeah, so during their walks, they have these great pads on their feet, and they can sense vibrations to the very minutest detail,
yes.
Even like animals burrowing under the ground. And it's almost like a ground-penetrating radar, but it's also almost like a drum, you know?
They, yeah.
Putting rhythms back into the earth to realign.
They detect infrasonic sounds, which are sounds below the range of human hearing,
mm-hmm.
and they can detect earthquakes. They've told me they can sense other elephants that are miles away as they move, and they're so sensitive that they can tell, you know, if it's a large group or a small group, if they're agitated, if they're calm, all these kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
just through sensing their footfalls and their energy. They also project energy through their feet and through their trunks, you know, mm-hmm. the noises they make.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in Asia, when there was that big tsunami in 2014, and people talked about how elephants went to higher ground and saved people in the process.
Grabbed people up.
Because they could sense it. Yeah. They could sense it coming.
Yeah, that's amazing. The elephant culture is particularly amazing, and they exhibit traits that are very human-like in honoring of their dead and honoring of the living, even. You know, there was a, I watched a documentary on a man, I think he saved maybe the matriarch of a pack, and then they come a yearly to make pilgrimages to his house and say hello and honor him.
Yeah, he's called the Elephant Whisperer. Uh-huh. He wrote a book called The Elephant Whisperer. And when he died, for several years, the elephants came.
That's what it was, yeah.
To, on the date of his death, these elephants would come from miles away and stand around his house just in his honor.
Yeah, yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
It's a great book if you haven't read it, The Elephant Whisperer.
Yeah, and how they honor their dead as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've talked about that. I've got some of that in the book too. How they pay homage to those who have died, and they bless them, and they show them respect for the lives they lived. And there's this just wonderful communion of spirits with the ones who have died.
Yeah, there's different names that people try to call them versus animals and natural resources. One is other than human, which is very otherizing, very objectifying, and it keeps the animal at a distance. But one is more than human.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where the elephants really fit in into that terminology, that nomenclature of more than human, you know, because they perform a larger function that humans are, we can't even contemplate, you know. What are they doing with their footfalls? What are they doing bringing their electromagnetic energy through the savannas, and how are they healing, and all these things. Like we natives believe in patterns, you know. The person who wears the headdress, there's a pattern, there's a power that flows out of that, and they put that person in front so that all the people behind can be protected by that headdress. And these elephants work in very similar cultural ways.
Yeah.
And so they actually have societies and ceremonies and things that that they do that are very close to human beings. Natural human beings, indigenous people, I should say, you know, on how they honor, you know, the dead and how they live their life and view interconnection.
Yeah. Well, even physically, the elephants are called a keystone species because, you know, they'll knock down trees and pull out things and they make space for other beings to survive. When I was in Africa last summer, I watched as these little baboons would sit sifting through the elephant dung, finding seeds to eat. And then I also saw a pile of dung where the seed had sprouted, and this whole new tree was starting to grow. You know, and then other animals can make homes in these old dead trees, you know. And so they really are the architects of the landscape. And they're very important in that way. And one thing I'd like to say, when you talk about more than human, one thing the animals have emphasized to me, I think it was particularly the whales, is that humans are precious beings, and we have capacities that other animals don't have. Like you said, we're the only ones who can change the whole face of the earth. And we're doing it often in destructive ways. But they were really honoring us as creative beings and with the potential to do great good as well as great harm.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We are the only ones who can really change the world by our thought.
Yeah.
You know, and so they are locked into contributing to life.
Yeah.
You know, and like a medicine person who married my wife and I. He got his medicine from the spotted elk of the north in a vision, and he went around healing people. So I don't have faith because I've seen healing happen, you know. And so I know there's a larger, greater power out there. But the spotted elk of the north cannot give another spotted elk of the north the power to heal. You know, that only belongs with the human being, you know, and with the gifts that we've been given.
Yeah.
So, and abuse, you know, because of the colonized lack, fear state that we live in created by society.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, and these animals can help us get out of that. Is there any particular advice that animals give to humans that you're aware of?
Particular advice?
Like Coco?
Yeah, I mean, they just say that it's up to us to heal the earth. And if we can listen to the animals, they have so much wisdom to share. Mm-hmm. They want to help us. They want to work with us. And it just takes human beings to be being open to receiving what the animals have to offer, you know?
There's the old trope that the world will be much better without human beings. Yes and no. You know, it'd be a lot more greener for sure. But then it would lack organization, because that's who we are. We're created last in order to organize all the stuff that was created in front of us to create life for our elder relatives and ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
And so, I forgot where I was going with that. Yeah.
But we talked about that. I talked about that with the elephants. Because I said, so if all humans are gone, wouldn't it be paradise here, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And they said, no. They said humans contribute by their evolutionary process, by who they are and what they do. And without humans, the earth would be a pretty... I don't know what the word would be.
Sad
place. You know?
Yeah, that's where I was going with it. Yes, it would be a greener place, but all these animals and plants, they love us.
Yeah.
And they want to see us succeed.
Yes, they do.
And like a lot of these varieties of plants wouldn't even be around if it weren't for us. And now, varieties of animals, you know?
Yeah.
It'd be the mule, you know? the koi wolf? You know, that
to
interbreed because, you know, the dealing with...
What about this little doggy here? We wouldn't have all these breeds of dogs either.
That's true. And actually, the Shih Tzu is, I hear, is more closely related to the wolf than more other, a lot of other breeds. And that, and his communication is very high, you know. He just tells me what's going on, and we're a symbiote unit walking down the path, you know.
Oh, that's so cool.
I usually make him let him make all his decisions where we're going, you know. So I don't care, you know, where he wants to go, you know.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah. So your podcast. Tell us more about your podcast.
I'm very excited about our podcast. I'm a co-host with and co-founder, whatever you want to call it, with Avantika Mather, who's a young woman who lives in Canada. She lives in BC now. And we've been doing this for a year, our podcast. It's called Animals and Us, Voices of a New Paradigm. And the new paradigm is about people seeing animals as conscious, sentient, wise beings. And respecting them in that way.
Yeah.
And we've interviewed some amazing people, you included, and some really interesting people doing fascinating work with animals and all different kinds of things.
Yeah.
So it's been really, I've met some wonderful people, and we're still going. We're going to keep going.
And you can find that on all the podcast servers? Okay, great.
Animals and Us. Voices of a New Paradigm, and I've already said the website, it's animalsandduspodcast.com.
Okay, and you could find links to the Soul of the Wild book?
You can find that on my website, which is barbarashore.com, and Shore is S-H-O-R. There's no E there. Mm-hmm. Everybody puts an E on it. Mm-hmm. Barbarashore.com, or it's available on Amazon, or bookstores can order it, too. Mm-hmm. Any bookstores can order it. I have some here at both Soundpiece and Bloomsbury Books.
Oh, okay. All right. So you don't have a large presence on the internet, because I did try to research you on YouTube, because that's what I have time for. And you did come up with a Dr. Gubbins, I think it was.
Kara Gubbins,
yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys came up with 10 ways that you guys know how people can tell that animal communication is real.
Yeah, to eliminate skepticism. Yes. And I do need to get on YouTube, I realize. I need to do that.
Yeah.
I haven't been the best at promoting myself.
Yeah, I suck at it too. Mine's more of a cultural thing.
Oh, well, I'd like to say that, but I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then she was bringing up a number of ways, one example was if the behavior changes from before the communication and then after communication, such as the example of Spirit, the leopard,
right.
Who was violently standoffish.
Yeah.
And had completely turned her head around when there's communication there, and there was nothing was expected of her, you know, and that she could just, it's here for her. She's free to roam, and she doesn't have to have contact with human beings or anything like that, you know. So that's one way, and then 9 other ways.
Yeah. Well, there are lots of ways to tell if it works. One is when, you know, for me, when I've been working with a person with their animal, things I say just resonate with them. They seem true. And often it's something the person already suspects or thinks about or knows, but I'm just validating that for them because, you know, mm-hmm. I think it's important for people to trust what they know, their mm-hmm. own intuition. Mm-hmm. Another way is, like, for instance, with my book. You know, how do I know I'm really talking to the elephants? That's mm-hmm. been a question for a long time. Mm-hmm. But some of the information they gave me, I found out, is true. For instance, I learned years ago that as they move on the earth, that these sounds, they make sounds that can be detected miles away, or that they can hear other sounds, you know, in the earth or on the earth. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. But years later, it was proven there's a woman named Caitlin O'Connell, Dr. Caitlin O'Connell, who studied elephants in Namibia and found out that they make these infrasounds and detect them. And then I was reading and found that there are these Pacinian corpuscles on their feet and at the ends of their trunks that can actually detect these infrasonic sounds. Mm. But I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. The elephants told me. Mm. Or the whales many years ago told me that sound travels faster in the water than in the air. I didn't know that. And I found out it's true. Things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there are different ways of telling whether it's true. And the other thing is these validation signals I'm talking about, like for me getting teary, deeply mm-hmm. emotional, because I know it's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've learned to trust that.
Yeah, yeah. You can't help that from happening when your heart is ripped wide open.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are lots of ways to know that it's true, and it's still really challenging.
Yeah. Well, I'd ask you to tell me what my dog's thinking, but I already know what he's thinking.
Yeah. He looks pretty relaxed.
He's pretty happy with his life.
Yeah. He sure is.
Yeah. So we are approaching the end of our show here. Is there any messages that you want to get out to the listening audience?
Yeah. I'd just like to say that the more you can open yourself to listening to the animals and the plants, the happier you'll be and the wiser you'll be, because they have so much to share. And they depend on us, because we have the ability to change the world, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our responsibility to do that. So we're all evolving together, and the more that we can honor that process and honor who they are, I think the better we'll all be.
Yeah, thank you for that. And for our listeners, one final contact list for your barbarashore.com.
Barbarashore.com.
S-H-O-R.
BarbarashoreSHOR.com. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then my podcast is animalsanduspodcast.com, or on any of the big venues, it's Animals and Us, Voices of a New Paradigm.
Mm-hmm. And she's a local author, Soul of the Wild, The Wisdom of Elephants, and you can pick that up at Bloomsbury and where else?
Sound Peace,
okay. Uh-huh. And well, thank you for coming on the show.
Or from me.
Yeah, or from you
if
directly.
If you contact me, I will. Uh-huh. I'll get you a book.
Oh, good. So do you get it paid better if they get it directly from you?
Actually, I do.
Yeah, so good. Order it directly from
that
Barbara.
Would be great. And I charge a little less, too.
Oh, awesome. How awesome is that?
Yeah,
she gifted me a book, and I can't wait to delve into it. I've been studying up for my permaculture teacher trainings course that I'm leaving for tonight for a week.
Oh,
plus.
Wow.
Yeah. Going to be fun. So, a big adventure. So, yeah. Well, thank you for coming on the show. And I really appreciated listening to your wisdom on animal communication.
And thank you for having me. I'm just so impressed with you and who you are. It's been a great honor being with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Very kind. And I invite our listeners to decolonize, re-indigenize, naturalize, and be in symbiosis with our elder relatives. All right, everyone, have a beautiful day.
With many tribes, weeping on wailing on mourning, you got yourself to blame. I tell you,
give a shout out to our underwriters right now. One of them is Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice. Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice brings together labor unions, religious congregations, student groups, and community organizations to improve working people's standard of living, job security, and their right to organize. You can get more information at sojwj.org by giving them a call at 541-841-8341.
You are tuned to KSKQ 89.5 FM Ashland and 94.1 FM Medford, your community radio station.
We have over 40 programmers who volunteer to bring an amazing show to your ears every week. Have you ever thought about being on the radio? Thank you for listening and helping to make local radio happen.